back in the days before Netflix and DVRs and streaming on demand. If you missed a week of your favorite TV show, too bad. Maybe you'll get lucky in the reruns. So there was this handy little feature at the beginning of every episode called the recap. I can remember sitting with my family and hearing previously on Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Even when you'd seen the episode, it helped to remember after a week away, right? So you probably guessed where I'm going with this. As we pick up with week two of our sermon series on Ruth, previously in the book of Ruth. And I'm going to ask for your help with this, those of you who were here or who've read the book. When does the book of Ruth take place? In the time of the judges. Was that a good time? No. The family of Elimelech at the beginning of Ruth moves to Moab. Why? There's a famine. They don't have food. They go to Moab, and what happens? They all die. All the men die. Elimelech dies. The two kids die. Happy Father's Day. So, poor Naomi is in Moab. What does she hear that sends her back on the road to Bethlehem? What does she hear? God has blessed his people with food. The famine's done. We can go home. So on the road back to Bethlehem, Naomi tries to send her Moabite daughters-in-law back home. They've got no future with her. Remember this, the plight of a widow in that time, a widow without kids, without male kids, not good. Orpah goes back. Ruth clings. Ruth makes this extraordinary speech of loyalty. She says, I will leave behind my family of origin. I'm going to stick with you, Naomi. I will be part of your people. Yahweh will be my God. Do you remember what are the three themes we explored in chapter one last week? This is a little harder. Redemption. Yes. Chesed. Yes. So one more. It's the one that you can't say in just one word. How God works in the world. How God works in the world. So today, as we enter chapter two, it's a big contrast. Chapter one was dark. There's a lot of bitterness, even though it ends with the harvest. Remember, the barley harvest was beginning, and that's where we pick up in chapter two. We get to meet Boaz today, the kinsman redeemer. I just want to say from the start, sometimes the book of Ruth gets portrayed as this just beautiful love story. You know, this beautiful girl meets the handsome guy and they fall in love. That's not what's going on. Let's just make that plain from the start, and we'll say a little more about that as we go. This morning, I'm going to look again at our three big themes and how they show up in Ruth 2. And I hope that by the end of this time of the service, we're going to start to get a sense of how these three themes come together to show us the message of this beautiful book, three themes that begin to come together. So let's start with redemption. Where does redemption show up in Ruth 2? If you remember from last week, redemption is this really big theme in Scripture. And part of what we're doing in this series is exploring our own name as a church, Church of the Redeemer. What does that mean? Redemption, if you might remember, it started as a money term. Something that has to be bought back that's been lost or sold, kind of like a pawn shop. It's in the shop, you can't get it back. Someone is needed. Someone or something is powerless and needs someone strong to reclaim and help them. So as chapter two starts, what are the problems that Ruth and Naomi are facing that they're powerless to overcome on their own? What are their problems that they got to figure out? Food. Yes. They are widows and have no way. They got no land. They got no way. How are they going to get food? What else? I heard future. Yes, future. And basically, these are all questions of survival. Survival in terms of food, physical needs. Survivor in terms of protection. Because women back then, if you didn't have a guy around, you we're vulnerable to a lot of stuff, bad stuff, as well as future of the family line, which for the children of Israel, for the nation of Israel, was a big deal. God had given them land and said, this is your inheritance. They didn't want to lose that. So Elimelech's family being in kind of danger of no future, this is a big deal. These are all questions that as we start chapter 2, how are they going to solve it? What are they going to do? Well, Ruth doesn't have a lot of power, but she makes the most of what she has. She's got physical health, and she takes action in one of the very few ways available to her. She goes out to glean, picking up the remnants from the ground. And believe it or not, this gleaning launches us right into the theme of redemption, because Israel had laws about gleaning, and those laws are directly tied to their own story of redemption. Do you remember what I said last week is kind of the big paradigm redemption story in the Old Testament? The Exodus, yes. Years and years before that, God had made a covenant with Abraham, and his descendants had become enslaved in Egypt, powerless, oppressed. They could not get out of that on their own, and God, Yahweh, redeemed them, delivered them from their oppressors when they were powerless to save themselves. So as they come out of Egypt, God gives them the law. He says, I've redeemed you. You're my people. Here's how to live as my people. And this theme is repeated over and over in the law. The gleaning laws are directly tied into Yahweh redeeming Israel from slavery. Here's Deuteronomy 24. Do not deprive the foreigner or the fatherless of justice, or take the cloak of the widow as a pledge. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. That's why I command you to do this. When you're harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, do not go back to get it. Leave it for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. Then it says the same thing for the olives and the grapes. Don't go back and get ones you forget. Leave what remains for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. This is why I command you to do this. In contrast, other nations we know would leave gleanings on the ground as an offering to the harvest gods. If it's left on the ground, that's for the gods. The God of Israel says, no, give that to the vulnerable. What a contrast. So Ruth, who is a foreigner and a widow, goes out to glean. Gleaning is the equivalent of trying to survive through like recycling aluminum cans or dumpster diving. This is subsistence. And again, remember, this is the era of the judges, where Israel's not known for following the law, probably also the laws about treating foreigners kindly and leaving food behind for them to glean. So this is risky. Who knows what she's gonna find out there? And through a miraculous chance, and we'll come back to that, Ruth lands in the field of Boaz, a righteous man, and we'll come back to that too. So by the end of this chapter, Ruth and Naomi have been redeemed from hunger through Boaz's actions. And this brings us into our second theme. Where do we see chesed? So fun to say. Chesed, H-E-S-E-D, transliterated, in Ruth 2. Remember this word from last week? It's a word that's hard to translate into English. It shows up in translations as loving kindness, mercy, steadfast love, kindness. Anybody guess where this word shows up in Ruth 2, which you have printed for you in your bulletin? Take a minute. I know it's a long passage. Just see what you can do. Should have brought my candy. Jackie. Yes, he certainly shows chesed. We're going to come back to that. Look at verse 20. I know that's way along in your passage. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. That's chesed. He has not stopped showing his chesed to the living and the dead. This chapter is an enormous shift for Naomi. Those are her words. Remember what she was saying about Yahweh last week? God has brought evil on me. I left full. He brought me back empty. And now she's saying, Chesed, the Lord and Boaz have not stopped showing Chesed to the living and the dead. She's blessing the Lord. What happened to bring about this famine to feast story? What happened? It starts with Ruth. Ruth shows tremendous initiative and courage. Naomi, you might remember from last week, she's in grief. She doesn't even talk to Ruth for a while. It's so human after all she's lost. She might be paralyzed, unable to think what to do next. Well, Ruth shows chesed, compassion and commitment for Naomi's good, determined to go out and get food for both of them, despite the risk. Ruth could have gone back to Moab. She stays, she follows through on what she said she will do. And this is risky work. As we said, Ruth is a widow, a woman without male protection in the time of the judges. And she is a foreign widow, which makes her doubly vulnerable. As she goes into the fields, she basically becomes a female foreign worker. Commentaries rightly bring out the danger here. Female foreign workers tend to be invisible to many, but far too visible to those with bad intentions. It's the same now. So Ruth's body, her being, invited danger as she went into the fields, and she went anyway. Some of it she needed to survive, but some of it she was in that position because of her chesed love and devotion to Naomi. What is she going to find in the fields? Is she going to find favor, which could also be translated grace? Well, enter Boaz. Our clever narrator, again, tells a great story in this chapter. Verse 1, he just mentions, hey, there's a relative on Elimelech's side. Oh, he's a clan member. He's a man of standing. He's got power and status. I wonder what's going to happen. Well, sometime in that very first day that Ruth begins to glean in the field, Boaz comes to the field to check things out. And the first word in Hebrew out of Boaz's mouth is Yahweh. Yahweh be with you. This is a good sign. He notices Ruth and asks about her. Not because of her beauty. Again, this is not a love story. She stood out. Boaz would have known who his workers were. He didn't recognize Ruth. And the overseer's response emphasizes three things. This is what the overseer sees when the overseer sees Ruth. She's foreign, doesn't say her name. She's just the Moabite from Moab. She's a hard worker. And according to the overseer, she's presumptuous. The overseer seems to imply that she's not just gleaning, but she's gathering from the sheaves as well. He kind of portrays her as a foreigner who's gathering grain excessively. The overseer is not a fan. He might be complaining a bit. What will Boaz do? Boaz replies, not to the overseer, but to Ruth, directly. And from his very first words, we see chesed. This section reminds me of those times that I've seen an advertisement, and it's some crazy product they're trying to get you to buy, and there's this string of, but wait, there's more. This section is all, but wait, there's more. Boaz starts with, my daughter. These are gentle words, and they're the same words Naomi uses at the beginning. It also implies a really big age difference. Again, this is not a like typical love story. Boaz says, no, don't go elsewhere, which gleaners would have wanted to do to get more grain. Don't go elsewhere. Cling to the women who work for me. This is the same word in chapter 1 as Ruth clinging to Naomi. Devotion, stay here. Boaz doesn't just give Ruth permission to glean. He says, follow along with my people. And he gives Ruth his protection. I've told the men not to touch you. But wait, there's more. When you're thirsty, drink from the water jars the men have filled. Well, in Israel, foreigners were supposed to get water for Israelites, and women were supposed to get water for men. But Boaz is saying, here, foreign woman, you drink from the water that Israelite men have fetched. This is astonishing, astonishing kindness and grace, way above and beyond the law. No wonder Ruth falls down on her face in gratitude. Why are you showing me such favor, such grace? I am a foreigner. That is my status. Why are you showing me chesed, covenant love? Well, Boaz says, well, I'm responding to how you showed chesed, Ruth. He uses language that makes us think of Abraham, who left his homeland, his father and mother, to follow Yahweh. There's a comparison here, a good one. Ruth did that too. And Boaz says, this act that you've done, Ruth, is so extraordinary, only Yahweh can fully repay you. And Boaz prays for the Lord to make whole what Ruth has done. This section makes me think of Psalm 36:7. How priceless is your steadfast love, your chesed, O God. People take refuge in the shadow of your wings. And there's irony, because Boaz prays for God to repay Ruth, to make whole what she's given. And little does he know, he's going to be the answer to that prayer. You can imagine Ruth breathing a sigh of relief because she can gather food here without being in danger. She's found food and protection. But wait, there's more. Boaz invites her to join his crew for the midday meal. He didn't have to do that. He's moving Ruth. Ruth is moving from foreigner to part of Boaz's group, step by step toward being part of Israel. But wait, there's more. He piles on the grain. How long has it been since Ruth has eaten as much as she wants? Whew. But wait, there's more. He tells his workers to pull out sheaves for Ruth to pick up. And not just not to touch her, but not to verbally harass her. One commentator says, it could be translated, don't hoot at her. Treat her well. This is way beyond gleaning. This is extraordinary chesed. And by the end of the day, Ruth brings home a month's worth of food, plus the cooked food that was left over from the midday meal. Imagine Naomi sitting at home, thinking of all she's lost. And then in comes Ruth through the door with this enormous sack of grain and then pulls dinner out of her pocket. Naomi is shocked and delighted. How in the world? Blessed be the man who showed you such grace. Oh, it was this man named Boaz. And suddenly, I can just imagine the light coming back into Naomi's eyes. Boaz. Blessed be he by Yahweh, who has not ceased to show chesed to the living and the dead. Is it Yahweh or Boaz that she says is showing chesed? Yes. And then the narrator reveals Boaz is not just any kind man. He's one of our kinsmen redeemers. And Ethan's going to tell you more about that next week. This brings us to our third theme. Where is God at work in Ruth 2? Remember last week we talked about how Ruth overall portrays God working indirectly, kind of in and behind human actions, very much like how God works in our own everyday lives. Last week we had one instance of God directly intervening to break the famine and bring food back to Israel. This week, are there any direct interventions from Yahweh, anything we're told that God has done directly? No. But there are clues that God is at work. As I've said, Ruth takes the initiative to go out into the fields. That's her human action. But verse 3 in our translation, it's as it turned out. The Hebrew is more literally, her chance chanced upon. As luck would have it, it's overemphasizing this chance thing to imply the exact opposite. Kind of like when you say with a wink, what a coincidence, meaning not a coincidence at all. The narrator says this isn't chance. Somehow, God is directing things beyond what any of the characters can see. Somehow, Ruth ended up in Boaz's field. Somehow, it was in a way that she ran across Boaz. Somehow, Yahweh was behind it. Somehow, Ruth ended up in the field, not just of any old kinsman redeemer, because there were more around, but of Boaz. In chapter 4, we'll learn he's not the only family member with obligations of duty here, but he is the one with the character and the faith to show chesed. Boaz is a man of God, and thus he becomes a man through whom God accomplishes God's purposes. That's a Father's Day sermon. Boaz is a man of God, and he becomes a man through whom God accomplishes God's purposes. Boaz also takes action in this chapter to show Ruth chesed. None of the characters are just kind of sitting around. Okay, God, are you working? They're acting. But as Boaz shows chesed, he takes part in answering Naomi's prayer for her daughters-in-law in chapter 1. Remember, she prayed, "May the Lord show you chesed, as you've shown chesed to your dead husbands and to me." She prays for the Lord to show Ruth chesed, and through Boaz, the Lord does. Marian Ann Taylor, a commentator, writes this: "As Boaz's favor expands to include extravagant and generous acts of chesed that offer Ruth protection, provision, and inclusion, Boaz becomes part of the larger divine plan of rewarding Ruth for her decision to leave behind the gods of Moab to take refuge under God's wings. Somehow, mysteriously, God is at work in, behind, and through the extraordinary actions of Ruth and Boaz in this chapter. This is a marvel to me. I've mentioned already this morning, this is not a love story that we're reading. This is a story of how God works redemption through human acts of chesed in everyday life. God works redemption through human acts of chesed in everyday life. In this time of the judges, society was breaking down in every way you can imagine. Institutions off the rails. The leaders got worse and worse, and everyone was doing what was right in their own eyes. And yet what Ruth and Boaz show us is that even with all that, with society doing that, chesed was possible for those who walked with Yahweh. It must be possible for us too. Last Sunday, as I was driving home from church, getting ready to turn onto 41, there was a woman on the median, which I hadn't really seen there before in that particular intersection. She was dark-skinned, her head was covered, and she was holding up a sign. You've seen many women like this. I rolled down my window to say hi, because I've tried to start doing that whether or not I have money to give, just to say hi and try to look someone in the eyes. And I said, "I'm sorry, I don't have any cash today." And she said, "Food? Do you have food? I don't need the money, just the food." I thought of Ruth. I don't know this woman's story. I know her name was Maria. But how many others are there like Maria, like Ruth? How many are there around us? How might we, as individuals and as a community, how might we be called for us to take action to offer chesed as God's agents of redemption to orphans and widows and foreigners here and now? I don't know. I wonder. As those who've been redeemed, I wonder, what do we have to offer? As chapter 2 comes to a close, the problem of Ruth and Naomi's immediate survival is resolved. They've got food. They've got protection. If Ruth kept up her rate of gathering and threshing, she'd have collected close to a year's worth of food for them by the end of the harvest season. Hard work, but she's not yet out of the woods. So Ruth clung to the women of Boaz until both harvests are done, and after that, she lived with her mother-in-law. She lived with her mother-in-law. What's that about? Well, presumably Ruth saw Boaz more times throughout the harvest. There's been little inklings. Oh, he's a family member. Oh, he's taking interest. Is there going to be more? Is he going to take her under his protection? But by the end, she's still living with Naomi, still a widow. The little hopes the chapter began to raise have kind of fizzled out. The second half of Naomi's prayer for Ruth, may the Lord grant that you will find rest in the home of another husband, have gone unanswered for now. But we've begun to hope in the God who redeems through acts of chesed love. I wonder what will happen next. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.